dramatic health production.
Forget genius. In many ways, the significant advances in modern medicine can be viewed as little more than the product of a happy combination of dumb luck and coincidence. As you're about to hear, some of healthcare's most significant milestones were the result of fortuitous accidents followed by scientific rigor. But serendipity and science alone don't improve health and healthcare. It took curious, creative, and persistent individuals to bring these accidental discoveries from the lab bench to the patient bedside. These are their stories. This is Game Changers in Medicine. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. David Albert. David and I had the pleasure of working together while I was based at Oklahoma State University. I don't think it's an overstatement to say that David is a true innovator and an outright genius. Of the dozens of patents he holds, the one that has caught my attention the most is his patent for CardioMobile, the personal EKG he invented more than a dozen years ago. This invention pairs a simple, portable device with any smartphone to capture a medical-grade EKG in 30 seconds. It's truly staggering technology, but is incredibly simple for the layperson to use. Just think about it. Just as Fitbit and other activity trackers allow people to monitor their fitness, the personal EKG gives people the ability to track their heart health on a daily basis if necessary, and transmit that information directly to their doctor. For anyone with heart issues or at risk of them, Dr. Albert's CardioMobile invention is a true modern-day game-changer in medicine. David, thank you so much for making the time to join us on this podcast. We're into the sixth episode now. We focused the initial few episodes on historical discoveries and kind of made a strategic decision to pivot to present-day game-changing discoveries. When the discussion came up, the first guy I thought about was you. And I think history is going to look back on you as somebody who changed the face of medicine for future generations. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. We're really privileged to have you. And if you want to just take a few minutes and kind of introduce yourself and tell us about who you are and your career trajectory, that would be really great.
Well, thank you, Ruben. And it is my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation. My name is David Albert. I'm a physician. I'm an inventor. I'm an entrepreneur. And I'm the founder and chief medical officer of a company called AliveCor that produces a device called the CardioMobile. We have over 1 million customers, and we're in 37 countries today. We've opened offices in India, in South Korea, in Australia, and literally around the world, in addition to the Europe and the United States and Canada. So I'll give you a little bit of my history because I think it's relevant. In 1980, I was 9 months away from finishing my medical degree from Duke, and my father had a heart attack. And when he got out of the hospital, his cardiologist, who was a friend of mine and a Duke-trained cardiologist, said, Dave, your dad needs to go through cardiac rehab, and he lives out in rural Oklahoma. And for those of you who don't know, my father was really pretty famous. He was the Speaker of the House. So you think of Nancy Pelosi. Well, my dad was named Carl Albert and was the Speaker from 1970 to 76, including when both Spiro Agnew and Richard Nixon resigned. He was first in line for the presidency. He came from rural Oklahoma. And so he went back there and they said, we want you to walk, Mr. Speaker, until your heart rate gets to 120. And he was about 70 years old. And I just knew my father couldn't measure his heart rate. He couldn't feel his neck. He couldn't feel his pulse. So I said, what kind of heart rate monitoring equipment is there? Well, in 1980, it's not like today with Apple watches and even Polar chest straps. There was nothing. So I went to one of my classmates who had been an undergraduate engineer at Duke. And I said, how do I make something? Because I knew nothing about electronics, nothing about computer programming. And he said, well, I have a friend of mine who is in grad school here at Duke in biomedical engineering. And why don't you talk to him? And I did. And I gave this guy $200. Now, $200 to a medical student, I might as well be $1 million. That meant I was eating ramen noodles twice a day, not just once a day. And so 2 months later, the guy comes to me with this board full of wires and stuff. Says, well, it doesn't work, but here it is. That's all I'm going to work on it. And I was like, are you kidding me? And that really, well, it made me angry. And so I said, this is ridiculous. So I went to the dean of Duke Medical School and the dean of engineering, and I said, I'd like to take a leave of absence and become an engineer.
So David, let me be sure I've got this straight. You're just 9 months shy of completing medical school, and you take a leave of absence to pivot to engineering?
I no longer wanted to be dependent on someone else. And so I said, Dad, I want to help you and all the people like you. And he said, okay, I'll support that effort. So I spent the next 2 years in engineering school, took undergraduate courses, then graduate courses at Duke, and then finished the last 9 months of medical school and went back to the University of Oklahoma for training. I got married to a young woman who was who had been starting medical school when I finished 6 years, and she's at Duke. And I bring her to Oklahoma, and she is in training with me, and I have an invention. And nobody wanted to license my invention. And I said, this is a fantastic invention. What are you kidding me? Nobody wanted to license it. So I tell my wife, and we have a young baby, that I'm going to start a company. I did nothing about starting a company. I had no MBA, I had no experience. And my wife and my dad at that time said, are you kidding me? You're kidding. You're quitting your training and you're going to go do this? This is crazy. So my mentor at Duke was a cardiologist named Galen Wagner, who was one of the world's experts in electrocardiography. And my mentor at the University of Oklahoma was a guy named Ralph Lazara, who for 25 years was the chief of cardiology. And they convinced my wife and my dad, let Dave do this. He can always come back and finish. You know, it's a risk, but it's not a bad risk. And I've never looked back. And it wasn't always easy, but I started my first company, and AliveCor is now my fourth company. Sold my last company to General Electric and was the chief scientist of GE Cardiology for 3 years until I couldn't stand it anymore inside of a big company. And that's the non-traditional path I took.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward to 2007.
Okay.
In 2007, the late Steve Jobs gives one of his famous presentations. And as he walks off the stage, he turns around and does one of his famous one more thing. And he comes back out and he talks about, you know, we're working on a new device, and it's an internet connector, and it's a music player, and it's a communication device. He was talking about the iPhone.
Right.
That invention changed the world. You know, this device is the remote control globally for our lives. It's how we bank. It's how we communicate. It's how we take pictures. It's how we record videos. It's how we interact with healthcare. And so in 2007, I said, I have an idea. I want to connect patients directly to doctors. And in the thing I know, cardiology, I want to do it with their EKG. And I went to a friend of mine who lives in Australia, who's an engineer, who's a really smart guy and a close friend. And I said, we can do this. And he said, no, we can't, mate. It's locked. There's nothing. Fast forward to 2009, there's now an app store. You can now develop apps. And I said, went back to him and said, now we can develop my idea. And he said, no, the Bluetooth is locked down. You have to buy a chip from Apple. Nothing is open. And I said, I have an idea of how we can do it. And so we spent the next 10 months building what was first Cardia, which was a case for an iPhone 4. And on December 14th, 2010, I received a package of 15 prototype cases from a contract manufacturer in Hong Kong that we had visited.
Let me just interject here. When David says prototype cases, I'm assuming those cases didn't look too different from the final product, what we know of today as the Cardia Mobile. To help paint a picture for our listeners, imagine a slim metal rectangle about the length of your index finger and maybe about an inch wide. There's a pad on either end of the rectangle. These are the electrodes where you place your thumbs to record your heart activity. It's a deceptively simple-looking device, yet I have to say, pretty sleek-looking.
They were EKG cases, and I had a prototype app from my friend in Australia. And on December 30th, the day before New Year's Eve, I went into my office and I made an unscripted four-minute video about this new device. By the way, my nine-year-old son taught me how to make a YouTube video and how to upload it. I had no idea. And the next week was the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And I was going to go there, but there were three or four companies that weren't going to be there, and I wanted to send them this video. So as I was finished it unscripted, one time, one take, I was uploading it, and there's a button you could push that says upload to your LinkedIn connections. Now, I wasn't on Twitter. I had Facebook. It was only friends, family, really, family, close family. And my connections, my social media was LinkedIn. Today, I have 11,000 LinkedIn connections. At the time, I had about 300, but they were people I knew from GE and places. There were some people from various cardiology-related companies. And so I clicked that button, and I went home. And the next day was New Year's Eve. My wife and I had a wonderful date. And I get home. It's past midnight. We celebrate. And all of a sudden, I get a text message from my partner in Australia. And the text message is, "Mate, what did you do?" "What did I do?" He said, "We have 300,000 views of that video."
Wow.
I said, "What? There's 1,000 every 30 minutes. It's unbelievable." The next day, which was a Saturday, I get called by Good Morning America, Fox and Friends, all wanting me to be on their technology shows from CES the next week. I'm inundated and I'm getting bombarded by emails and people. And it was amazing. And from that came later that year, my good friend, Dr. Eric Topol. He called me and said, "Dave, I got to have one of these cases. This is a breakthrough." And so I sent him one. He's included us in all three of his books.
I know.
He's been a huge advocate, never received a dime from us. Never. He does it because he believes it. After that, you know, we said, "I think this is a good idea. Start a company." I had Qualcomm, the world's, most advanced cellular phone technology company, invest. Since that time, I've had Omron. If you go into any drugstore and you buy a blood pressure cuff, it's probably Omron, $12 billion Japanese right. company. We have Mayo Clinic as an investor. And today we have Cleveland Clinic. Dr. Toby Cosgrove is on my board of directors. We've raised lots of money and we've created a real business. And we probably sell hundreds of thousands of devices a year, but we implement a service and it's all to implement that idea, Ruben, that we can connect a patient and empower a patient directly, give them power over their own condition. And we've put some semblance of understanding and control into that consumer's hands. And we connect those patients directly to their doctor. They don't have to go through a switchboard. They don't have to go through a nurse. And I think that has been a game changer. And it is, during the pandemic, it's been not just a game changer, it's been a necessity.
Yeah.
Patients couldn't go to the hospital, couldn't go to the doctor's office, and being able to cyber connect them became something even more important. So there's the story of AliveCor in my journey.
Right.
But it's been a wonderful journey.
David, thank you. That's a fascinating story. And I think, with the list of names that you mentioned as, key stakeholders in AliveCor, I think that bears testimony to the discovery. You mentioned early on that you deliberately chose the EKG. Now, for the non-medical audience, could you just, briefly explain what an EKG is and why it's important and why you chose that as the solution that you wanted to implement.
Well, first of all, I had a lot of experience in cardiology. The most common test is a 12-lead EKG. A technology developed by Wilhelm Einthoven in Germany back in the early part of the 20th century and still is relevant today in the era of MRI and CT and electrophysiology and mapping. That's a testimony to how good that test is and how important it is, because our heart is a pump, but it's a pump that's controlled by electricity. And that electricity can be measured on the body surface. Most often, you're familiar with putting electrodes, little stick-on devices on and connecting to wires and to a machine that you might have an EKG for a physical in a doctor's office, at a hospital. You might have seen people have those wires connected in intensive care or when they're being monitored. And that's because that electricity controls the pump. And if the electricity goes haywire, the pump stops working. And we all know that that's a bad thing. You know, that's when you hear the beep clear. So monitoring, and there are many ways the electricity can go wrong. You know, good news is it oftentimes doesn't happen until you're older, like my age, in my 60s. But so it's a critical test. It's used globally. It's inexpensive. It doesn't require a big hospital or a big imaging machine like a CT or an MRI. And now we've made it ubiquitous. This was a technology that relates to every heart patient in the world. And the fact that we could take the power of that smartphone, whether it's Android or iPhone, doesn't matter, and enable the connection between the patient and the doctor with this critical information that tells you how well your heart's working, I hypothesized that that would be important. And I think that hypothesis today has been proven true.
Absolutely. I kind of regard you almost as the father of the commoditization of medical devices. You know, that's what you did with an EKG, which is, you know, which has been historically a medical device, you know, a test that you could only get done by physicians in a hospital environment. And I think you started this move towards commoditization of devices. And, you know, as you said, it's becoming increasingly common. What do you think has been the major impact of making EKGs mobile and a commodity?
Well, first of all, accessibility. I mean, we live here in the United States of America, where we spend almost twice as much per capita on healthcare than any other country in the world. I mean, Switzerland's next, and they're only 60% of our spend. So we almost have unlimited spend here. The rest of the world may be considered a little more rational in how they spend on healthcare. And so that notion of an ivory tower, of only being able to get a test when you're at a hospital or at a doctor's office, doesn't fit when there aren't brick and mortar doctors, hospitals, doctor's offices and hospitals around the world. And so this device is the great equalizer. So now I can tell you this is a little aside, but there's a mobile money system called M-Pesa in Kenya that people use their cell phone because they didn't have banks.
Yes.
They could charge, they could recharge their phone, they could pay for things. And I was the beneficiary hearing one of the founders of M-Pesa about 7-8 years ago here at USC talk about, we buy sugar by the spoonful, bread by the slice. That's how we're going to buy healthcare. And that smartphone is today the front door to healthcare for the vast majority of people in the world. And we not only give them access that they don't have, but we give them power. And that's true here in the United States. Here we spend too much money. Other places, they don't spend enough. So how do we solve both of those problems with a simple solution? And that is, we empower people and we give them access. And I think if I've done anything, it's that. I mean, sure, we diagnose people. I have to say, I'm embarrassed to say, we have lots of people writing us, telling us, you know, you saved my dad's life. You did. It's embarrassing. I'm humbled. But the reality is, we gave people power over their own healthcare. And I think for all of us, that's important. And so that, you know, if I'm proud of anything, I'm proud of that.
Well, thanks for igniting that, David. I mean, you're right. I think that's certainly one of the biggest contributions that this device has made. So I want to kind of pivot back quickly to the actual invention process. You know, one of the things that we like to focus on for the podcast is these serendipitous events or accidental kind of discovery component of that. Is there anything that you want to tell us about that, you know, speaks to that in this discovery process? The story behind the story.
Yeah, there is a story behind the story. First of all, the idea of connecting a patient's EKG directly to a doctor was one I had in the mid-1990s. And when we started, you just couldn't implement it then. You didn't have portable computing. You didn't have cellular communication. We didn't have the power of a smartphone. You didn't have the infrastructure. And so that was an idea that I filed some patents on and got them. GE acquired those patents when they bought my company in 2000. And what I can tell you is we started AliveCor. We went and licensed those patents from GE. And it's a very interesting story. As I told you, my partner in Australia, the engineer, said, "Mate, we can't do this. The iPhone is locked down. There's no way to interface to the Bluetooth." And I said, "Wait a second. I got an idea. I see these things for these mosquito ringtones that kids are using."
So what is a mosquito ringtone exactly?
Basically, a mosquito ringtone was a ringtone that operated at about 20 kilohertz so that teachers couldn't hear it and kids could keep their cell phones on because only they could hear the 20 kilohertz or the 15 kilohertz, too high above our old people's ears. And I said, what if we used that technology to go into the microphone of the iPhone to interface the EKG? And that's what we spent 9 months doing. Got a bunch of patents. In fact, got a patent in China on that.
Wow.
We used inaudible acoustics, ultrasonic transmission. And at first, the patent office said, "We don't think this is worthy of a patent." We have 37 patents at AliveCor now. And I went to the patent office in suburban Virginia. And I sat down with them and I handed my iPhone to the patent examiner and I held the case.
So you actually administered an EKG on yourself right in the patent office?
It was a woman looked at the EKG and said, "Wait a second, I don't hear anything. How's that working?" I said, "Ultrasonically." 2 days later, we got our patent and her boss, up one above her, said, "Yeah, that's fantastic. That's the first time I've ever had a patent examiner, and I have 71 patents, tell me that something was fantastic." So I think we did something right. That is, it was a mosquito ringtone that teenagers used so that they wouldn't be detected, that we turned into a life-critical medical device. Now, that is a serendipitous moment, Ruben.
That is fantastic story. I mean, I actually was not aware that you use ultrasound as the part of the technology.
Well, we've moved on. We have other ways, but our main today, CardioMobile, you see ads on TV for, uses ultrasound to talk to an Android or an iPhone device today.
Yeah, fascinating story. Who would have thought? So David, you've alluded to some of the challenges that you face in this discovery, which once again I must compliment you and congratulate you for. What are some of the other challenges that you had to encounter to actually bringing this product to fruition?
Well, first of all, in medicine, it's one thing to sell a device to a consumer.
Right.
Consumers very seldom ask you for peer-reviewed data. But doctors and cardiologists are notorious for saying, "Show me the proof. Show me the clinical value. Show me the change in outcomes."
Right.
And so today we have over 115 peer-reviewed publications of clinical validation for AliveCor products. And I'm very proud of that, Ruben. And in the beginning, I would do a presentation, and inevitably there'd be a hand would go up in the audience afterwards, and they go, but this is not a 12-lead ECG. I was prepared for that question, and I go, you're right, it's not. How many leads of EKG does that automatic defibrillator that's over there against the wall need to decide it's going to save your life?
Yeah.
And how many leads does an implantable defibrillator use to decide it's going to save your life? In both cases, the answer is one. And usually they just sit back down when I'd say right. that. Yeah. Because I said, this doesn't do everything a 12-lead ECG does, but it does a lot. And it gives us a lot of insights. And so today we have a 6-lead ECG that gives you half the 12-lead ECG. And that's available to consumers. And that gives the cardiologist even more valuable information and gives the patients even more comfort. And so I can tell you we're moving in that direction. But the reality is we faced that challenge early on and we addressed it by going and doing clinical studies. And from then on, you know, we've been the beneficiaries of embracing validation. And that's advice I would give to any digital health entrepreneur is you must prove the value of your solution. Don't assume that people will accept it otherwise.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. And I think, you know, you really are an embodiment of these three pillars around which we construct this podcast. You know, we're looking for these interesting stories behind the actual discovery. We're looking for that being wrapped around a good body of science and validation. And then I think the third is the person, that kind of entrepreneurial spirit and mindset, I think, which has characterized not just these historical discoveries, but you know, these modern day discoveries, as I said. So given that you're operating in this space, David, and you know, you're based in Silicon Valley, and you know, there's a lot happening there. Can you just share with the listeners what are some of the major trends that you're tracking in this whole space of mobile health and sensor and AI-driven technology and, you know, commoditization of medical devices and that kind of thing? Just give us your predictions for what the future direction is going to be like.
AI, machine learning, deep neural networks, deep learning, I think those are going to help revolutionize. You know, the chairman of my board is a very famous venture capitalist, Vinod Khosla,
yeah,
who famously said that 80% of what doctors do will be done by AI. And I think of it not as artificial intelligence, but as augmenting intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings have phenomenal capability. You know, deep neural networks are the best pattern recognizers we've ever developed. So that now speech recognition, image recognition are far better than they've ever been before. But what I'll say is that we're scratching the surface. And so giving consumers at home, imagine a home AI that helps you decide, do I need to take my child to the doctor? Do I need to do a virtual connection? Do I have COVID? Something very relevant. That's the power that AI will do to augment physicians, because we're not making more doctors. I mean, we're already behind, and the rest of the world's even more behind.
Yeah.
You know, if you talk about Africa, South America, India, China, they're not going to have the ratio of physicians to population that we have, and therefore they desperately need that augmentation. So that's one trend. The other one is the smartphone gets more powerful, more connected. Now we have 5G, such that we're putting more and more power in the hands of consumers. Now, not every consumer is a patient, but every patient is a consumer. And so the more we empower them to be engaged in their care, the more compliant they will be. And the more compliant a patient is, the better the outcomes will be. And we know this, whether it's taking your medicine or changing your lifestyle, your diet, exercise. These are critical aspects. And if we can use technology, AI, mobile computing, mobile sensors to improve prevention, then we've come full circle. And so those are the trends, AI, mobile sensors, as you said, the commoditization.
So, David, you've shared a ton of information with us about your story and you know, the actual invention, etc. Do you have a sense of what the global impact of your discovery has been to date? I can only imagine how positive and powerful this has been worldwide.
Well, what I can tell you is we will have over 100,000 EKGs be uploaded to our cloud on any given day from 100,000 different people. And so every month we have nearly 3 million ECGs uploaded by 250,000 people every month. And that's all over the world. And not all of those people have their lives saved. But I can tell you, we detect serious problems every single day. And we connect those patients because within our app, you can send your EKG to a cardiologist and have it interpreted and sent back to you so you can know, even if you don't understand it or our AI doesn't give you a satisfactory answer, you can get a human expert. And that's very important for us. It is empowering the patient, enabling them to have this information and to be a better patient. And I think, you know, this dates back to when I started it. I wanted to help a patient near and dear to me, my father.
Yeah, I mean, I think undisputedly, David, one of the modern day game changers in medicine. So we want to thank you for, you know, participating and for the wealth of information that you've imparted, definitely to me and the team and the listeners. Fascinating story.
Well, Ruben, thank you for the invitation. It's been my pleasure. You are an innovation leader in healthcare, and if we all know, we need as much innovation as we can get today. And we've had necessity is the mother of invention, and COVID has turned us all into inventors.
Yeah. Thank you so much, David. We really appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
This brings us to the end of this episode, but it's really just the beginning of the story. In season 2 of Game Changers in Medicine, we'll be looking at other new medical technologies that are disrupting healthcare by empowering patients to proactively manage their own health. We'll be exploring how telemedicine, robotics, gene editing, digital medicine, and machine learning are changing the game for everything from diagnostics to prevention and care. I won't say more, other than to assure you that the ideas we've long held about what a patient is and what a healthcare provider is are about to be turned on their head. Until then, thank you for joining us today.
Dramatic Health Production.